right, it's Liam. I want to thank everyone at the Oasis Podcast, as you were.
Hello and welcome back to the Oasis Podcast, the ultimate audio guide to Oasis. This weekend just passed was National Album Day on Saturday the 14th of October. So I thought this would be a good chance to go through your guys' ranking of all Britpop albums. So a few months back, I ran polls on my Twitter account asking you guys to score every Britpop album, similar to how we do the Oasis A to Z. Now, anytime you have this sort of ranking or poll, you always get into that old what is Britpop debate. Well, in this case, I'm just going by my gaff, my rules. If to me, I thought it felt like Britpop at the time, or looking back now, you kind of think, yeah, it sort of feels like Britpop, then fine, I'm going for it. So, for example, you know, The Manics are here, but it's only Everything Must Go and This Is My Truth. So I haven't included Holy Bible. Yes, it came out in 1994, but it's not Britpop. It's too dark. It's not. It doesn't tick that box for me. I'm not including The Prodigy, Chemical Brothers, rockier acts like Terrorvision and Therapy. Radiohead aren't in. I think they're something different. I think they're a little bit more sort of complex. And the fact they were off in America, you know, they don't feel Britpop to me. So while I obviously cover a lot of these bands when I'm doing Britpop history, when it comes to actually rating and ranking Britpop albums, I don't think these really qualify. So that's where we are today. And in terms of timing, I've got one from 1992, which is Denim Back in Denim, which a lot of people do sort of pick out as like the first Britpop album. I mean, you can kind of go back a bit. I mean, you could even go to like The Lars, people like that. But no, I think that Denim Back in Denim is a good shout. There's a handful from 93, obviously including Suede's debut album. And then there's a few from 98, including Pulp's This Is Hardcore. So, and that's where I draw the line. So there's nothing from late 98, 99 is where we sort of draw the line. So, so that's where we are and what we're doing. You can hear there by my clearing my throat there. Was it Bob Fossil from The Far Show? I'm a bit Bob Fossil at the moment. I haven't been feeling too good for the last week and the voice has gone a little bit. So this is actually my second attempt at this show because what I actually did was recorded a version using AI, using sort of one of these sort of voice, text-to-voice software things. And I was going to put that out, but then I sort of put it out on Patreon and a few people have got in touch. I also asked on the Discord, you know, what do you think? I think it's quite entertaining. I think it's quite good fun. But a few people have said they didn't really enjoy it and they just found it quite annoying. So I think it's entertaining. So what I've done is I've sort of, you know, I'm feeling a bit better now. The voice has recovered a bit. So I'm recording this myself. And then if you check out the Oasis Podcast B-Sides channel, then you will hear that version. If you want to hear that version, I think it's worth a listen. I think it's quite entertaining. I sort of use quite a few different voices and I put in a few funny bits in there because I think it'd be quite entertaining to hear the AI voice do it. So anyway, I would give that a listen if I was you. Go and check it out on the Oasis Podcast B-Sides channel. If you're not subscribed, just search for Oasis Podcast and you'll see it pop up. Or search Britpop History because that's the main one that you get over on that feed. But anyway, let's crack on then with this top album ranking. So there were 121 albums that I defined as Britpop albums that I got you guys to vote on. And let's start off, shall we, with the one that unfortunately came in last place. 121st is No Coincidence by Jocasta. Now, I think this is harsh, and I think a lot of these lower ones, they do tend to be the lesser-known albums by lesser-known bands. So I think a lot of these, to be honest, I think the people voting didn't even know the band or had never heard the album in full, at least. Maybe heard a couple of singles. And yeah, so I think it's a bit of a shame, really, because there's some really good albums in this sort of bottom kind of 20 or so. But I think they've just scored so low because people just don't know them. So this Jocasta album that comes last, I really like this one, actually. I did start going through after I did this list and got all the scores. A little sort of project I was going to do over on YouTube primarily is actually rating them all and doing reviews of like every Britpop album. I don't start sort of minor things. I sort of think, right, I'm going to review every Britpop album. So anyway, I did about the first two, I think, and then sort of realised it was a lot of hard work. Similar to when I tried to review 1,001 albums and stopped at like 13. But, you know, these could all be revisited again in the future. But anyway, so Jocasta is one I did review in a lot more detail. So if you head over to the YouTube channel, you can check that out. But I really like this album. I think it's sort of very bombastic. It's over the top. It's got strings and it's sort of... you know, that sort of brilliant Britpop guitars that we love. Great album. I really like it. Sort of quite witty lyrics and stuff as well. The guy Tim Arnold's gone on to do a lot of other interesting stuff. So real shame, I think, it came last. But probably gets a bit more attention to it because it came last. So there you go. Right, in 120th place, second from bottom, we have Dunce by Molly Halfhead. This is another one that I've covered on YouTube, so do go and check that out. And this not only is not available on streaming, it's also not even on YouTube. So, you know, it's very hard to actually track this down. You physically have to go and buy the CD, which I did. I think that really explains why sort of this scored so lowly. I'm sure if this was available on streaming or if it was one that people had heard a bit more, you know, it would probably got a bit more traction, a few higher votes. But as it is, it did come in second from last. And the Oasis connections are there, obviously. Lead singer Paul Bardsley was in the band Fancy Chicken and the Amateurs with Noel. So, if you are sort of a bit of an Oasis completionist, then you should probably go and check this out because Noel wasn't involved in the album, but, you know, the guy that was involved with Noel. So there you go. And it's a good album. It's very good. It's sort of quite dark and he's got sort of quite a strong sort of strange accent. It's a Manchester accent, but he's sort of got a bit of a weird sort of speech pattern. So, yeah, it's a quite an interesting album. It's quite an acquired taste, shall we say, but I did really enjoy it. I hammered it quite a bit when I did that review video. Definitely worth checking out. All right, 119. Let's run through a few of these. We've got quite a few of these that are sort of these kind of lesser known Britpop bands that did put albums out, but, you know, didn't necessarily break through. So they count as Britpop, but, you know, there's a very good chance that, you know, you haven't heard of a lot of these. So 119, we have Rubbernecking by Elka. 118th, we have The Gyres with First. 117th, we have Volcanoes by Tiny Monroe. 116 is Lux by Thurman. So now this is another one that isn't on streaming, but this is a band I've seen and I really love this album. I've got it on CD. I saw them back in Oxford Sound City in 1997, which is when I kind of went to a demo jury and our demo got played, and that actually sort of helped get our first ever gig. So it's got it's a very special time for me. And Thurman are a great band, you know, really sort of interesting and quite glamorous and quite bizarre. You know, they're quite quirky and stuff. They're really worth listening to. Really like them. So definitely go and check out Thurman. Famous is probably the biggest track that they did. Then we have 115, we have Flamingos with Plastic Jewels. 114, we have soda with artificial flavor. And 113, we have smaller with badly. Now, as you should know, who was in smaller? Say it with me. Dixie. That's right. This was Dixie's band. And this is really great. You know, Dixie, Noel has talked about in the past being such a great songwriter, you know, cousin of the Real People. And he is a brilliant songwriter. And yeah, I think Richard Bowes described Smaller is like the most Britpop band, you know, and you can really hear it. It's like the most of its time. It's very, very much. It's got the guitar sound. Dixie's great. His lyrics are hilarious, very dark and interesting and quirky. But yeah, fantastic stuff. So love a bit of Smaller. Don't sleep on them. Definitely check it out. 112, we have Salad with Drink Me. 111 is The Auteurs with their second album, Now I'm a Cowboy, and they do deserve to be here as much as Luke Haynes hates Britpop and argues against it all the time. It's only because he knows that they are a Britpop band, really. Number 110, we have a Monaco, Music for Pleasure. Now, Monaco was a spin-off band from, from Peter Hook, who was in New Order, and then Revenge. And then his bandmate David Potts in Revenge and him started Monaco. And I really like Monaco. They've got sort of that real sort of cool kind of Peter Hook bass sound, which I think works really nicely. And yeah, and then the Oasis connection there. Peter Hook has had some run-ins with Oasis, including being the host on the first radio session they did, the Hit the North radio session. And then, and Potsy was one of the people that auditioned for Oasis when Gem and Andy joined. He did audition, and apparently he was just sort of quite arrogant and stuff in the session, like reworking chords and things like that. And so, didn't end up getting the gig, which I suppose he's probably kicking himself about now. 109, we have an album that I really, really love, which is David Devant and his spirit wife, Work, Love, Life, Miscellaneous. This is a really funny album. Very witty, and there's some hilarious songs. The probably most famous one is Ginger, which is great. But there's loads of really good songs in it. It's one I listen to quite a lot. Big choruses, big glammy, over the top sort of stuff. Sort of Divine Comedy, I suppose, is sort of similar. Really funny, and definitely a pleasant listen if you've not checked it out. 108, we have Geneva with Further. 107, it's another Oxford band and one of my favourites. It's the Candy Skins with Fun. Now, this is another one that's not on streaming, so it's annoying because you can't actually kind of listen to it particularly easily. It is on YouTube, so if you want to dig it out, then go and give it a listen. Most people know the track Wembley. That's been used quite a lot, obviously been connected to football things. That is an absolute banger, but the whole album's great. Definitely worth checking out. Love the Candy Skins. Number 106, we have the Auteurs again with their first album, New Wave. 105, Salad with Ice Cream. Salad with Ice Cream sounds like a strange concoction. Maybe Heston Blumenthal would come up with that. 104, we have 60 Foot Dolls with The Big Three. 103, we have These Animal Men, Accident and Emergency. These Animal Men was a band that I never really listened to back in the day, but I think I've mentioned this before on another episode, but there was a poster of These Animal Men at the Bullingdon Arms where we played a lot of gigs, and I went to see a lot of gigs in Oxford, and I just thought they were the coolest looking band I'd ever seen. So I always meant to check them out, but never did. I wasn't going to go buy the CD, was I, with 15 quid? I had more important things to do. 102, we have My Life Story with the Golden Mile. It was great to see them at Speakeasy a couple of years ago. 101, we have, like I mentioned, the only one from 1992 on here, Denim with Back in Denim. Right, we are into the top 100 now. At 100, we have Baby Bird with Ugly Beautiful. He's another one, similar to Luke Haynes from The Auteurs, that hates the term Britpop and hates to be associated with Britpop. I think he might have even given Britpop Memory some abuse for tagging him in things. I think he blocked him probably. But that Ugly Beautiful is a funny album. I did listen to it for the first time kind of a while back, and it's very weird and annoying. I don't like it really. Obviously, You're Gorgeous is the big track off it, but yeah, he sort of seems a bit pretentious. I don't like the guy. At 99, we have the Wannadies' first album, or I think it's their third album actually, but it's the first album from the two that I count as Britpop, which is Be a Girl. Great album, all in all. You and Me song is on there, which is obviously fantastic, and their big breakthrough track. But yeah, fantastic album. And yes, they're Swedish, so they're not British. They're one of only two non-British bands on there. The other one being the Cardigans. We deem we in the Britpop community deem the Cardigans and the Wannadies as honorary Britpop. So they're allowed in. That's fine. It was passed at the Great Britpop Convention of 1996. At number 98, the AI guy was far better than me. At 98, we have Ride with Tarantula from 1996. Now, Ride are a tricky one because the early albums, Nowhere and Going Blank Again, I think are their best albums. Well, and then you've got the later ones as well that are really, really good. But the only ones that qualify for kind of Britpop here are Tarantula and Carnival of Light. So I am putting them here as Britpop for those two albums. I think the sound is quite Britpop-y. Here we go. Here's the track from Tarantula, Black Night Crash. You can definitely hear it's got sort of, you know, it's not as quite as shoegazy as the as Ride's early sound. Okay, next up we have the Candy Skins again. This time it's their better known Sunday Morning Fever album. So this is the one that was the sort of the bigger hit because, you know, this is a lot of, you know, once Britpop was big and they were on TFI Friday. I mean, that was a really big deal for me because, you know, it was like the local team, you know, getting through to the latter stages of the FA Cup. It was so exciting for, you know, really exciting for them as people. So that was great. Unfortunately, I never made it. But there we are. 96, we have Heavy Stereo. And we all know the Oasis connection here, don't we? This is Gem's band. And this album, I think, is fine. I don't think it's brilliant. It's quite limited. And if you kind of know Gem's songwriting from Oasis, you kind of get, you know, what he was all about. It's very much that kind of 70s rock, kind of glam rock kind of sound. And it's good. It's pleasant. It's enjoyable, but it's not particularly mind-blowing. So yeah, understandable why they're here at 96. 95, we have Edwyn Collins with Gorgeous George. I wasn't sure whether to include this one, but A Girl Like You was a massive hit at the time, and so, you know, I did feel it kind of needed to be in there. Also, Edwyn Collins, I saw supporting Pulp. So actually my first ever kind of proper live band was Denim, actually. That's interesting. I hadn't sort of put the two together, to be fair, but yes, because I saw Pulp at Wembley Arena and it was Denim, then Edwyn Collins, and then Pulp. And that was my first like proper gig. So I do think Edwyn Collins should be there because, you know, he was there, he was supporting Pulp, he was, you know, and that track, A Girl Like You, was great. So although he's really an 80s star from Orange Juice, I think that album probably ticks the Britpop box. All right. 94, we have Gorky's Zygotic Minky with Barafundal. And yeah, I like this album. It's a good, they're a good Welsh band. A bit quirky, a bit strange, but yeah, all good fun. 93, it's My Life Story again with Mornington Crescent. 92, it's These Animal Men again with Come On, Join the High Society. 91, we have Dubstar with Disgraceful, another brilliant band. You don't really hear talked about very much now, but they were a great band at the time. Some really big pop hits like Not So Manic Now and Stars. I wasn't sure about including them because they were quite kind of poppy or trip-hoppy at the time. But yeah, I've put them in here. Especially, I love their cover of Billy Bragg's St. Swithin's Day. It's fantastic. 90, we have The One That Dies Again with Bagsy Me. So this was sort of the big one because this is after You and Me song had come out. And so a lot of people went out and got Bagsy Me on the strength of that. Yeah, and You and Me song they then put on this album again as well, which is a bit cheeky, but understandable. And yeah, and my favourite track on here is probably Hit. So let's have a bit of that. Okay, at number 89, we have Gene, Drawn to the Deep End. Gene were never really one of my favourites, you know, in the Gene and Suede. Sort of, I put them in that kind of category as more sort of inspired by kind of Morrissey and a bit sort of fey and quirky. And it wasn't necessarily my kind of Britpop. I was more of a lad rock person. But I loved Pulp, though, to be fair. So what does that mean? I don't know. Gene, I don't know. I never got on with his voice massively, but I've gone back to them and I do really appreciate them now. 88, we have Echo Belly with Lustra. We'll hear more from them later. 87, Tiger. They're not an Oxford band, but they're not too far away with We Are Puppets. And 86, massively underrated, Silver Sun with their self-titled debut album. I love Silver Sun. They're one of my favourite bands. You know, I put them on so much. They especially over the last few years, maybe it was because James from Silver Sun died, but, you know, that album, you know, Golden Skin and Hot Lava, and I just love it. I love Silver Sun. Right, 85, we have Marion. With This World and Body. Marion, you know, is another one of those great bands from the time that just sort of, there was just a lot of very, very good bands around. I sort of seem to remember him particularly as being a very handsome man. But yeah, not one I ever got into massively. 84, we have Kinnicky with At the Club. Remember Lauren Laverne? She was in Kinnicky. Now she's like doing Radio 4 stuff. But yes, she used to be a proper little indie punk rocker. And Kinnicky were good fun. 83, we have McCalmont and Butler with the sound of McCalmont and Butler. So really, this is a one-track album for me. I love Yes. I think there's another one. I think it's called You Do, which was also a single, which was fun as well. But I have tried to listen to that album in full, and I just sort of give up, to be honest. I really don't like it. It's sort of a kind of a outside of Yes. It's just sort of a bit more of a soul album, and it just doesn't do it for me at all. And I love a lot of soul music, but I just don't really like that album. Right, 82, we have Boo Radley's Giant Steps. Now, this is one I do think should be a lot higher. I've been listening to it a lot because it's recently celebrated its 30th anniversary, and we're due to cover it on the next Britpop History podcast. Now, apologies. If you're following along with Britpop History, I have fallen behind with it, and I'm gutted because, you know, I was trying to keep it exactly 30 years and was going back. We'd started in what, March 92, so March 22, and I've been going all the way through to what, August 23, and I've fallen a little bit behind. But I'm going to get caught up and get cracking on again with Britpop History, and we're going to talk about Giant Steps, and it's a masterpiece. It's really, really special. Yeah, it's all over the place. Like, there's reggae type tracks, and there's this shoegazy stuff, and then there's sort of more teenage fan club sort of style, and then there's, you know, it's really, really magnificent. So, if you've only really heard of them because of Wake Up Boo and the other big singles, you should really go and check this out. Okay, next up at 81, as we mentioned earlier, is Carnival of Light by Ride. At 80, we have the Dodgy album by Dodgy. So this was their debut album released in 1993, and it's before they really found their feet. There's some good tracks on it, but it's not as good as the later two for me. At 79, we have Space with Tin Planet. Now, this is only one of five 1998 albums on the list. It is late, and I did think about not including it, but it's got Avenging Angels and The Ballad of Tom Jones on there, and they're so iconic from that kind of from that period. So it had to be on there, really. And yeah, it is a very good album. Talking of Keris, at 78, we have Catatonia's Way Beyond Blue. At 77, it's Boo Radley's again with Come On Kids. And then at 76, there's our other honorary Britpop Swedes, The Cardigans with Life. 75, we have another situation similar to Ride with James Whiplash album. Now, James had been releasing multiple albums going all the way back to 1986, but Whiplash from 1997, for me, is their Britpop album. You know, She's a Star came out, and they, you know, did the circuit at the time, and it felt like they were a Britpop band for that period. I also do one other James album comes up later, which I didn't necessarily, you know, I sort of toyed with not including it, but I sort of thought it should be on there. So yes, we will cover that in a bit. Okay, 74 and 73, we have two members of the supergroup Mantra of the Cosmos, who are currently kicking it around the country. We have Sean Ryder from Black Grape. Their second album, Stupid, 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 is at 74, and Andy Bell with his post-Ride band Hurricane Number One, with their self-titled debut, is at 73. Now, I really liked Hurricane Number One at the time, especially Step Into My World and some other tracks on there, like Just Another Illusion and things like that. I really liked. Listening back now, I don't think it's kind of held up as well. I think that, you know, you could tell Andy sort of loved kind of Oasis, and is very, very Oasis inspired. I think Alex Lowe, the singer's voice, is very Oasis-y as well. So you can tell that that was probably what they were going for. And it's maybe a little bit much, but yeah, especially Step Into My World, massive track for me, big inspiration for my band at the time. '72 and '71, we have both Saint Etienne albums, identical scores. So Tough and Tiger Bay at 72 and 71. 70, we have Space's debut album, Spiders. And yeah, I really like this album, actually. It's one I had on CD at the time, and it's fantastic. And it's quite eclectic as well. It's got sort of dancey tracks and sort of, you know, all kinds of different genres, all sort of like White Album-y style, lots of different stuff going on. Very interesting from Space. 69, we have Northern Uproar with their second album, Yesterday, Tomorrow, Today. Now, it's funny, this, you know, we're already up to what, 50 albums in, and I think there's been some really, really good albums in there. Yet you often get, you know, criticism of Britpop saying, oh, well, you know, I like Suede and Pulp and Blur, but the rest of it were crap or whatever. They are some amazing bands. You know, they just think we've already gone through like the 50 apparently worst Britpop albums. I think there's some absolute stonkers in here. Whereas Northern Uproar, interestingly, when you do sort of pick, like, well, who was the example of kind of, you know, oh, everyone jumped on the bandwagon and just sort of tried to sound like Oasis, I'd say it's probably Northern Uproar that people are thinking of, because they had the haircut, they had the sound, they were from up north, and they sort of got lumped in with that. And they aren't the best, to be honest, although they have had some pretty good tunes. And this is their second album, so not quite as good. But amazing here that, you know, they're at 69 out of 121. That's pretty impressive. And it shows that, obviously, a lot of Oasis podcast Twitter followers must really like them. Okay, at 68, we have Love Life by Lush, which on the other version of this podcast I've called Lush Life by Love, which is bizarre. But yeah, anyway, this is one of those other bands that were around for years before Britpop, but then kind of had their big Britpop moment with some big singles, including Lady Killers and Single Girl. They also did Chow, a duet with Jarvis Cocker. So you don't get much more Britpop than that, do you? And I thought that Mickey from Lush was excellent on the recent Channel 5 Britpop documentary they did, where she talked, you know, she talked all about really how, you know, what she was expected to do to sort of to come up with these hit singles. And like, she almost did it taking a piss. But it's like, wow, if you kind of taking the piss and you come up with songs as good as that, then, you know, carry on taking the piss, because that's fantastic. 67, we have Northern Uproar again with their self-titled debut. So yeah, there we are. Northern Uproar are done. 66, we have Echo Belly with their second one here, Everybody's Got One. 65, it's Corner Shop with When I Was Born for the Seventh Time. This is the only album of theirs I've put in here. I thought that really this is probably their kind of Britpop moment, although it's not Britpoppy, but it has got Brimful of Asher on it and stuff. And this was like the big one at the time, I suppose. So I thought it was probably worth being put on here. And I did interview Tejinder from Corner Shop a few years back, and I kind of did a two-parter. I did it on the Oasis podcast, where we talked about the Oasis stuff, and then 1001 Albums podcast. Remember, I was doing that back in lockdown. And I did that on When I Was Born for the Seventh Time. But we talked about their other stuff as well. So, yeah, definitely worth checking out. 64 now, we have probably the most Britpop of all Britpop albums, which is Nuisance by Menswear. Now, this does get unfairly maligned, I think, but I think it's a really good album. I think it's really well produced. I think it's really good fun. There's some great tracks on there. So, yeah, definitely worth a listen. And, yeah, really fun album. 63, we have Olympian by Gene. 62, we have First Band on the Moon by the Cardigans. 61, we have Homegrown by Dodgy. So this was their album from 1994 that sort of was really their breakthrough with Staying Out for the Summer, etc. At 60, we have a lesser known one, which is Whiteout with Bite It, which I've always thought that was annoying that they called it Bite It, Whiteout with Bite It. It's a fun game. Now, they are sort of a Scottish band that never really made it. But they're important in the Oasis story because, you know, you may have seen a lot of like Oasis gig tickets and posters with Whiteout at the top and Oasis underneath, because, you know, they were going out initially to support Whiteout on that sort of tour in early 94. And then, but, you know, by the end of the tour, the Oasis mega rise had happened and sort of Oasis had become the headliner and never looked back. At 59, we have Boo Radleys again, this time with Wake Up. That is the highest placed of their three on the chart, although I don't know. I don't necessarily think it's their best album. Obviously, I think Giant Steps is the best. And I really like Come On Kids as well. I think that's got some great moments in it, like What's in the Box. It's quite psychedelic and experimental. It's good stuff. But Wake Up's a good album as well. 58, we have Travis with Good Feeling. So I haven't included The Man Who because that came out in 99. And sort of I always think of Travis as that post kind of Britpop era where it sort of went a bit more quieter, a bit more Coldplay-ish at that time. And then into like Snow Patrol and things like that in the 2000s. But Good Feeling is a fantastic album and it's really good fun. And it's got some great tracks on it. You know, U16 Girls, always be careful, pushing that song. The song U16 Girls is fantastic. as is sort of Happy. And there's a song called Tied to the 90s as well, which is brilliant, which was the inspiration for my first foray into 90s nostalgia when I was on the radio back in university. And yeah, and Fran would do this thing where he would go like, oh, like that. I shouldn't do that with my voice. But yeah, and he did it in quite a few tracks, actually. It was like his little thing. But then, obviously, like when The Man Who became so big, they sort of went for that more acoustic sound and then sort of never went back to this kind of rocking sound, unless I've missed it, unless they did a really heavy album later on. Maybe they did an album of Metallica covers. I don't know. I didn't follow them that closely after what was it? The album after The Man Who I probably got. But then after that, I haven't followed them very much. At 57, we have The Supernaturals with It Doesn't Matter Anymore. 56, we have Sleeper with Pleased to Meet You. 55, it's an album I absolutely love, actually. It is a short album about love by The Divine Comedy. It's only seven tracks. It's about 31 minutes, but it's a fantastic collection of songs, including the single Everybody Knows Except You, which has got some brilliant lyrics in it. And I'll drop in a clip here of one of my favourites.
I told all of my friends again and again and again. I drove them round the bend. So now you're my only friend. I told the passersby.
Okay, for the next three in a row here, we have bands that were active well before Britpop, but then released important albums in the mid-90s, and so I have included them here. 54, we have The Real People with What's on the Outside. Now, we know these guys because of their Oasis connections. Very, very important. If you don't, then go and check out my episode with Chris Griffiths from the early days of the pod. It's one of my favourites. Great band, great album, definitely worth checking out. And I saw them at Speakeasy a couple of years ago, which was fantastic. If you do get the chance to see them, then definitely go and check them out. And they're lovely guys as well. You can go and say hello. 53, we have Grand Prix by Teenage Fan Club, or Grand Prix, the AI person said over on the other episode. What an album. Absolute classic album. It's almost like, well, do we sort of put it like Radiohead and the other ones and don't include it really, because it's kind of almost transcends Britpop, but I thought it had to be on here really. It was a big important one at the time. They had tracks that, you know, were on the radio and things, so it does feel to me like a Britpop album. Okay, 52 now, we have Dizzy Heights by the Lightning Seeds. So this was the album that followed up on Ian Brody's being involved with the track Three Lions. We'll be hearing from them again later, but this is a good album with some good singles on it, but it's not as good as the other album we will mention in a bit. 51, just outside the top 50, which is a big surprise to me. I'd probably have this top 20, I would have thought, is Manson with their debut album, Attack of the Grey Lantern. Now, this is a fantastic album, I think. Even when it starts off, I think it's called The Chad Who Loved Me is the first track, and it's all strings. So it's like a play on like The Spy Who Loved Me. And the singles are just killer after killer after killer. So incredible debut album. The second album, Six, as well, is absolutely brilliant. Once again, I thought it was just too late and a bit too sort of dark and weird, so I didn't throw it in here. But yeah, definitely could have. And Six is definitely worth listening to. All right, now we are into the top 50, and bringing up the top 50, we have the last of Dodgy's three albums, Free Peace Suite. So this, I'd say, is the most famous one. It's the one where it's like carved into a tree, and by this point they've kind of got the bleach blonde hair that you see in the Good Enough video and things like that. So yeah, really good album. Definitely one that I remember people listening to a lot on CD back in the day. 49, we have, into all bangers now, aren't we? Divine Comedy, Casanova. So this is probably their biggest album, with the likes of Something for the Weekend and Becoming Born Like Alfie on it. didn't include the album Fin de Siècle, which came out at the end of August 1998. That's got National Express on it, which was a big, obviously like a big Britpop song. But I don't know, end of August 98, I just thought it was a bit too late, so I didn't put it in there. But yeah, love Divine Comedy, so very, very happy to have them in there. Oh, and I'm going to be talking about Divine Comedy on the next Britpop History, because their album Liberation came out in 1993. So it's another one I'm not including. Once again, 93, but it didn't even chart and stuff, so I don't think it should be included. 48, we have The Long Pigs, The Sun Is Off and Out. I've talked about this album before, and the key thing that I always go back to on this album is the first four tracks are absolutely amazing. We have, it starts off like this: Lost Myself, She Said, Far, On and On. Like, that is just four of the best, you know, of the best Britpop songs in a row. It does fall away a bit after that. There's one more single later, which is Jesus Christ, which is a good single. But yeah, to be honest, I never really get through the album after that. I sort of tend to just go, right, well, I've kind of heard my four favourite songs. I don't really need to hear the rest. So maybe I'm doing them a disservice, and maybe there is some amazing tracks on there that I'm just not really giving attention to. But I suppose one of the problems when you front load an album like that, you're not leaving people to hold on and wait for the later ones. 47, it's Cast. I call them Cast. And their second album, Mother Nature Calls. So yeah, I like this one, but it's not as good as their debut, which we will be hearing from in a bit. 46, this is interesting. It is Ocean Colour Scene, Marching Already. I think you can definitely compare this as well to the Cast Mother Nature Calls album. They both sort of came out in 1987. I think they were both the second Britpop release. I know Ocean Colour Scene had done stuff before, but I don't really count that really. In terms of Britpop albums, it was their second one. And once again, I didn't think it was quite as good as the first one. So in this case, mostly Shoals. But it's still great. There's some rockers on there like Traveller's Tune and things like that. Okay, 45, we have Embrace with the Goodwill Out. Now, it is always a question, do we include Embrace in Britpop-related stuff? Because probably a bit later, you more sort of lumping them in with Travis and Coldplay. But I don't. I do think they are kind of Britpop to me. If you think that the singles were coming out all the way back from like February 97. So I definitely think of Embrace is like the summer of 97 with Come Back to What You Know and One Big Family and things like that. So yes, the fact that the album didn't come out until 98, I don't think it's that big a deal. Embrace were there in 97, and I do think of them as a Britpop band for that reason. So they're in there, and I think it's a really good album. I probably have it a little bit higher myself, but yeah, there we are. Next up at 44, it's Echo Belly with their highest one, which is On. And this is the one with their big singles. I think quite a few of my mates had this on CD. I remember borrowing it on CD actually, and what I did is I listened to it on shuffle on my CD player that had shuffle, and I remember thinking, right, I'm going to listen to it until I've heard all the singles. And it played all the non-singles first and then played the singles. So I did actually end up listening to the whole album. But yeah, it's a great album. And Great Things, King of the Curb, brilliant singles. Okay, at 43, we have Paul Weller, Heavy Soul. So this is the first of three albums that I'm counting as Britpop for Weller. Similar, once again, to Marching Already and Mother Nature Calls. It's a later Britpop album, bit rockier, a bit more dad rock. I suppose if you're doing sort of a dad rock kind of trio, it would probably be in there. But yeah, absolutely fantastic album, really cool. Peacock Suit, yeah, great stuff. Okay, and now at 42, which is The Secret of Life, which is quite fun for this album, this band to be The Secret of Life. It is Cooler Shaker with their debut album K. This is one I always go back to. This is one that's a classic to listen to in the car for me. when I went to Shine On a couple of years ago, I remember me and Joel listening to this in the car on the way back, just all the way through, and just being like, what an album. What a great album this is. So absolutely love this album. Incredible stuff. Right, 41 is the other James album that I kind of begrudgingly have put in here. So I, as you know, if you listen to this podcast regularly, I got into sort of Britpop and Oasis in sort of, you know, late 1994. Up to then, I wasn't really into kind of Britpop and indie music. I was into all kinds of different stuff. And so at the time for me, like, I knew James from the song Sit Down, but, you know, I didn't think of them as an indie band. You think of them as like an early kind of, you know, you can sort of imagine Tim with his floppy curly hair, you know, and they've got their sort of big baggy kind of early 90s clothes, like in the Sit Down video. So I don't think of them as Britpop. But, you know, the late album, 1993, yeah, you can probably argue it is Britpop, I suppose, in a way. It was one of those sort of important kind of important albums at the time when they were sort of shifting away from that early 90s sound into that, the kind of what became the Britpop sound. So we'll go with it. We'll go with it. Into the top 40 now, and it's the first appearance from the Manic Street Preachers with their number one album, This Is My Truth, Tell Me Yours. It's another later one, so you could argue it's probably a bit too late, but I think it's got to be in there. If you think of tracks like If You Tolerate This and You Stole the Sun from My Heart, you know, this is very, you know, it's a big album. Yes, it was later. Yes, this is sort of the dying days, and the music was turning into something else, but it wouldn't be right to not include it. So here it is. 39, we have the first appearance for Shed 7 with their debut, Change Giver. Personally, I've never really rated this one that highly. Shed 7 weren't, to be honest, a massive band for me back in the day. I really liked the track Getting Better, but beyond that, I just didn't really vibe with them. Gone back to them since, obviously, and especially the fact that I interviewed Rick Witter a few years ago now. You know, that was great. And actually, I went back to prepare for that interview, listened to all their stuff, and thought, these guys are really good, especially lyrically as well. You know, the lyrics, I don't think I gave credit to at the time. So, yeah, really good band. Change Giver has got some great moments, but overall, I just don't think they quite found their sound yet. Okay, 38, we have the Lightning Seeds with their second album here, and the top one, which is Jollification. Big breakthrough album for them and a really big one for me. Once again, I can just see the CD cover and people listening to it all the time back in sort of my teenage years. I suppose you could argue 1992 Sense album should be in there. Sense and Life of Riley's on that one, I think. That's very kind of what you would call a Britpop-y sound. And I think I argued, actually, that Life of Riley could be argued as like the first Britpop single, which came out around the same time as Pop Scene. But I suppose because there was that kind of connection to the earlier stuff like Pure and things, so it was a bit early. But yeah, certainly an argument for it. But I haven't included Sense. I have included Jollification, which is here at 38. 37, we have a great album from a band that usually, once again, get lumped in with the later scene, the post-Britpop scene, Stereophonics with Word Gets Around. I thought this had to be in here. You know, it's sort of similar to kind of a lot of those sort of 97 albums that you just think, no, it's definitely worth including. You know, those singles coming out as well, More Life in a Tramp's Vest and A Thousand Trees. Local Boy and Photograph. These were great singles. I saw them supporting The Who back in the day. And, you know, they were like the new Mannix for a while. Each song is like a short story. You know, that's what I love so much about this album. Each song is like a brilliant short story. And he was actually, I think, writing short stories at the time, Kelly. I liked the next album after that, Performance of Cocktails. I haven't included that. That feels a bit too kind of rock for me, a bit post. I think that came out in 98. It might have been early 99, but yeah, I haven't included that one. But yeah, this one I do think deserves to be in there. So yeah, good stuff. Stereophonics. 36, we have the first of three albums from The Charlatans. Now this is Up to Our Hips from 1994. It's got some great tracks on it. Jesus Hairdo, Can't Get Out of Bed, and the longest single title ever, I believe, which is I Never Want an Easy Life If Me and He Were Ever to Get There. Which, yeah, what a crazy name for the single, but fair play. Charlatans. 35. Now, it's the first appearance from one of the so-called Big Four. Now, if you know who the Big Four are, that's typically Pulp, Suede, Blur and Oasis. So the lowest ranked album by one of the Big Four is, who do you reckon? It's Dogman Star by Suede. Now, I think this is an epic album, actually. I think this is very, very good. Suede are not one of my favourite bands, you know, especially Brett Anderson's voice. Never been a big fan. But Dogman Star, I think, is an epic album. I think it's fantastic. The Bernard Butler's guitar playing is fantastic. But yeah, so I was quite surprised to see it down here at 35. Maybe people just don't know it as well. I don't know. But anyway, there we are. 34, we have the Blue Tones with Return to the Last Chance Saloon. It's another later one from 1998, but I thought it had to be in here. Marblehead Johnson and If, there's some great tracks on there. Track I always loved at the time is Sleazy Bed Track, which is fantastic. But knowing what we know now about Mr. Morris, yeah, didn't quite age very well. All right, 33, it's the first appearance of one of my favourite bands of all time, which is the Super Furry Animals with their album Radiator. And this is an absolutely brilliant album. Like, this should be higher for me. But I understand why. It's sort of a little bit quirky and weird, but there's some absolute bangers on here. The whole album start to finish is just incredible, with like Demons and Play It Cool and Herman Loves Pauline. Great, great, great album. Okay, 32. It's Suede again with Coming Up. Now, this was their big kind of Britpop album, I suppose, with like Trash and Beautiful Ones and Saturday Night. Big, big album. I never liked this. As I said, for me, and it was this era of Suede that made me not really want to go back and listen to the other Suede, because I don't like Brett's voice. I just couldn't vibe with them at all. I have then obviously gone back and listened to a lot of Suede over the years, and I can understand why some people like this album, but for me, I've just never really enjoyed it. And I think it does come down to me for Brett's voice, and he sort of, something he started doing a lot is going like "ahow" or "ow, ahow," like all that. He does it in pretty much every track, so let's just demonstrate that, shall we?
Suicide in your tattoos, your hide.
someone do a supercut of Brett going, uh-huh, I swear you could probably get like 10 minutes of that and put it on YouTube, do a few views. All right, 31, it's the only appearance for the Seahorses with Do It Yourself. I know they did a second album that was never officially released. You can get hold of now. I think it's on YouTube. But yeah, we've got Do It Yourself by the Seahorses. Seahorses were like my favourite band for like a week when they when that came out. I remember I was off school sick, and my mum, who's sadly no longer with us, said she'd buy me a magazine. Which magazine did I want? And I said whichever one had the Seahorses on the front cover. And so I was very excited to hear about the Seahorses. And I loved Love is the Law. It's a great, great track. And the whole album is great. I just think it's a bit weird with all the, with that mixture of kind of John Squire just wheedling all over these songs. It's just a bit strange. But anyway, it is a very great album with some fantastic songs on it. Right, into the top 30 now. And it's Black Grape with It's Great When You're Straight, yeah, their debut album. And it's funny, actually, when you sort of read back and look at the old kind of awards and newspapers, magazines from the time, you sort of forget how big Black Grape were. Because I don't think people talk about them as much. Like, people do tend to talk about the top four, or they talk about Elastica. But Black Grape were absolutely massive. And, you know, Reverend Black Grape won Enemy Single of the Year in 1995. And they were all on TV and stuff and radio. Yeah, Black Grape, absolutely huge. So, yeah, great album as well. Really good album. 29, we have Sleeper's debut, Smart. Now, we've got another one to come from Sleeper. I would have thought that this would be their top rated one, being their sort of debut. But yes, there is one more to come. 28, we have another female fronted band. It's Elastica with their self-titled album. And I'm surprised that the Elastica album is all the way down here, actually. Elastica's sort of, you know, often kind of heralded as like the, you know, one of the most important or respected of all the Britpop bands. I can kind of understand it, though, especially, you know, coming from Oasis podcast Twitter followers, you know, maybe not as big into Elastica. And also, I suppose the reason why is that, you know, it's not a particularly deep album, I suppose. You've got like the track Never Here and things like that, but it's pretty much just like a arch kind of quirky post-punk songs, you know, that are sort of 2-3 minutes long. So it's cool and really enjoyable, but I don't necessarily think it's sort of, you know, it hasn't got like a Champagne Supernova or a This Is the Low sort of thing. So I think it's a very strong album, but not necessarily like an epic album, if you see what I mean. Okay, 27, we have The Verve with A Northern Soul. This is sort of the crossover album for me. I was never massively keen on the first album, which I thought was just a bit too kind of space jammy and all over the place. And the songs all sort of merge into one. This album's got a bit of that, but it's also got some classic songwriting as well. History is one of my favourite tracks of all time. Absolutely love it. And On Your Own has got some great moments as well, but it's also got that absolutely dreadful bit at the end where he's just, what the hell is he doing? Look, let me just drop in a clip, but this completely ruins the song for me. Richard, what are you playing at, mate? Okay, 26, it's The Charlatans with The Charlatans. So this is the one with Just When You're Thinking Things Over on it. And come to think of it, actually, I think that Just When You're Thinking Things Over, it's probably the first Charlatans track that I don't think it was the first one I heard, because I probably would have heard the only one I know, but I think it was the first one that I really got into, because it was on a Shine album, and it was on, I think it was on Shine 3, and it was one that I had on CD and I absolutely hammered. I didn't understand the sort of the kind of the Rolling Stones kind of connection at the time. I think I probably heard the Stones track later, but yeah, I really loved that track. You know, when it goes, I'm coming home, love it. But yeah, the whole album is fantastic as well. So yeah, Charlatans at 26. 25, and it's Paul Weller again, this time with Wild Wood. Once again, is it a bit early? Is it not really Britpop? I'm putting it in here because, you know, I think it's great. I think it's very special. He was such an important figure in that era, in that period. So got to have Weller in there. And yeah, Wildwood, a very, very special record. 24, it is Supergrass. Love this band. Great band. You've got some fantastic album with some brilliant songs on it. I suppose it showed that I Should Coco wasn't a fluke. You know, this was a very special band, you know, that could write and play brilliantly. You know, I've talked about like the Stone Roses and the Who, Ocean Colour Scene, are bands with like each individual player is amazing. I think that's definitely the case with Supergrass as well. You can just listen to their albums, listen to the drumming, listen to the bass, listen to the guitar. They're fantastic. So great, great band. And there's some brilliant songs on here. You've got like the title track, it starts, is great. You've got Tonight is awesome. You've got Richard III is an absolute banger. So yeah, fantastic album. 23, we have This Is Hardcore by Pulp. So I think Britpop Memories usually points to this album, or then more accurately, Party Hard, the last single from this album, as like, okay, that's our closing point of Britpop. You know, the last sort of the come down album from one of the key bands who are singing about the party being over. Well, that absolutely makes sense that, you know, that should be the end of it then. This album disappointed me at the time because I absolutely loved Pulp. Massive band for me. Whereas at the time, you know, I remember listening to it for the first time with my mate Ben. And when the track Sylvia comes on, which I think is about track 12 or something, I remember thinking, like, oh, finally a chorus, you know, because it was so just whispered and there was just nothing going on. In so many of the tracks, it was just sort of so quiet and, you know, sad. But actually, you know, thinking back, having gone back over and over and over it, I just love it. It's a brilliant album. Jarvis is just on such great form. So, yeah, amazing stuff from Pulp. Right, now, so you might have thought, well, we had no Blur yet. And very interestingly, so there's four Blur albums in the in this ranking, in this top 121, which is amazing, really. So if you think that, I think they're one of the only bands, I don't think there's anyone else here that got four albums that count as Britpop, but yes, Blur do. And three of those four now come in a row. Oasis podcast Twitter followers basically given them exactly the same score, which is mad. We have 22, we have The Great Escape. 21, we have Modern Life is Rubbish. And 20 is Blur, the self-titled Blur album with Song 2. So, yeah, pretty mad that you know, three of the four Blur albums come this low. Although I can kind of understand it, because if you think, you know, would you give any of these albums 5 out of 5? Well, for me to get 5 out of 5, it needs to be pretty much a perfect album. And Blur never really did a perfect album. There would always be a couple of like quirky tracks that might do your head in, like Lot 105, Alex James, or, you know, things like that. You're just like, what is that? You know, why is that on there? Why did you include that? Like, so I get it, because there'd be sort of moments that would be sort of a bit annoying or whatever. So yeah, maybe they don't deserve a 5. Maybe they then deserve a 4. Yeah, so I get that. So hence it is down here, sort of in the early 20s. Plus also, you know, it is the Oasis podcast here. So yeah, so maybe some Oasis fans deliberately put them lower just because we're stupidly tribal. But I'm not stupidly tribal. I absolutely love Blur. They're one of my favourite bands. Saw them live this summer. Absolutely loved it. And let's have a little clip of one of my favourite tracks.
Food processors are great.
All right, so we are into the top 20 now. 19 is Super Furry Animals with Fuzzy Logic. Now, I've already bigged them up, but I absolutely love the Super Furries. Incredible band. This is their debut. I probably prefer the later albums, to be honest, but their debut is fantastic, and it's so full of passion and, you know, it's just so full of fire. Tracks like God Show Me Magic, you know, Fuzzy Birds is hilarious. It's got some sort of cool and quiet moments as well, like Hometown Unicorn, things like that. It's just a brilliant album. At 18, we have that Cast album that I mentioned, which is called All Change. This was an absolutely massive one at the time. I think everyone had this, and they had some brilliant singles, Sandstorm and All Right. What's it all about? Do you really want to know? Brilliant album, brilliant band. Funnily enough, you know, haven't quite kind of carried on at that level, have they? They've sort of often, they'll be supporting Shed Seven and things like that. Whereas I think at the time, you know, they were the band, you know, they were right up there with kind of, you know, you think you've got Oasis, Blur, Pulp, Suede, the Big Four. But then if you were sort of in 96, 97 like me, actually it was more like Oasis, Pulp, Blur, then Cast, Ocean Colour Scene. You know, that was really who was coming next for us. Anyway, there we go. At 17, and we have Suede's self-titled debut. So I've covered this on Britpop History recently, but this is a very, very special album. Fair play to Suede. You know, they really did change the game. And yeah, Bernard Butler's guitar work on here is absolutely remarkable. So fantastic stuff from Suede. 16, it is Sleeper with The It Girl. This is one I had on CD. I said earlier I thought Smart would end up being higher, but this was the one that had sort of, you know, in between there had been on the first album, and sort of that had been sort of the big breakthrough. But I suppose people were waiting for the new album, and, you know, Louise had become such a big player in the scene as well, and always being interviewed and stuff. So, you know, and you had tracks like What Do I Do Now and Sail of the Century, you know, which had a video with Dale Winton in it and stuff. So it was one of those that they'd become big players at the time, and everyone was desperate to get hold of this album. So yeah, I think it's sort of why it's up here at 16. 15. What is going on here? How is this at 15? Oasis, Be Here Now, 15th. What are you playing at? No, to be honest, look, I understand it. These are all now well into like fours, and I get why some people have scored Be Here Now not a five, because, you know, yeah, it is a bit too long and it is a bit patchy, but I absolutely love it. I think it's an incredible album from start to finish. I personally don't skip it, or do I? Maybe I might sort of skip Fading Out, or at least fast forward it. And maybe Magic Pie, but no, I'm normally pretty happy to listen to Magic Pie, to be honest. So great album, Be Here Now. Absolutely love it. And so I do sort of understand why it's 15, but, you know, outrageous, eh? 15, bloody hell. Right, 14, we have Mosley Shoals' Ocean Colour Scene. Another absolute classic. Personally, I do think it sort of goes a bit quiet, sort of once you get into the middle of the end of the album. I think you have some real bangers at the start, and it is a fantastic album overall, but yeah, probably could have done with, you know, a couple more sort of upbeat tracks later on, I would say. But there we go. It is fantastic. 13, it's another absolute classic. They're coming thick and fast now, aren't they? It's the Mannix with Everything Must Go. Absolutely incredible record from start to finish. You know, from Elvis impersonator through to No Surface All Feeling. Brilliant, brilliant stuff. I've listened to this album so many times. Absolutely love it. Charlatans Telling Stories is at 12. Interesting connection, I suppose, between this one and the Mannix Everything Must Go, in that it's a album from a Britpop band following up the loss of a band member. You know, obviously Rob Collins actually died, whereas Richie, you know, just went missing and no one knows what happened to him. But but both bands sort of had to come back and had to make changes and sort of and you know, what do you carry on? They both carried on amazingly, and and we're telling stories. This was their peak Britpop album, I suppose. I don't know if it's necessarily their best, but How High, North Country Boy, One to Another, big singles, and yeah, just a fantastic album overall. 11, it's Ash with 1977. This is the only Ash album I've included, because they did Trailer before that, but that's not a proper album. It's sort of, you know, it was a sort of an extended EP, I think, really. And then you have Nuclear Sounds, which was, what, 1998, but it's a bit late. So I did think about including it, but just feels a little bit late. And it was a bit rocky as well, so I didn't really think it fit in with Britpop. I loved Ash 1977. It's such a great album. It's got so many fantastic songs, like, you know, everyone sort of thinks Girl from Mars, but, you know, Angel Interceptor's amazing. You know, you've got Goldfinger's amazing. Oh Yeah's amazing. It's just the whole album is great. There's even some like really lovely sort of ballady tracks on there that you can just really chill to. So yeah, love that album. Although it's not one you can leave playing when you go to sleep, because you may well end up being woken up by the sick track. And Owen Morris is just a wrong'un. I was actually, when we went to the Oasis Collectors Group event, I was there, you know, being able to see, you know, where they actually, where Owen Morris got them to puke on the ground at Rockfield. What a wrong'un. What a weird man. They were only like 16 at the time as well, when he got them all hammered and was getting them to puke. Strange chap. Right, into the top 10. Here we are. Top 10. Number 10, we have Supergrass, I Should Coco. Now, I love Supergrass, and this album is a constant for me. I had it on tape back in the 90s. One of those tapes that you potentially wore out. Yeah, loved it. There's a couple of tracks that aren't amazing to me. I don't think Time is that great, which is, funnily enough, when Time was going to be the lead single from, and they, All Right was going to be the B-side, but then All Right was clearly the better track from the two. But yeah, Caught by the Fuzz and Strange Ones and I'd Like to Know, Lenny, Man Size Rooster, Sofa of My Lethargy, every single track. I think every single track is a banger, except maybe Time. I don't think there's any others. Oh, We're Not Supposed To is hilarious. Brilliant album. Absolutely love it. Right, 9, it's Pulp with His and Hers. This is a brilliant record. I say I love Pulp. I suppose, like a lot of people, I got into Pulp in 1995. For me, it was their Glastonbury set. I recorded that off the radio and just hammered that. I listened to that tape of them doing Glastonbury on the radio so much that I kind of know a lot of the in-between song banter off by heart. And I absolutely loved it. And that's how I heard a lot of those tracks, like Babies, Do You Remember the First Time, you know, Razzmatazz and Lip Gloss, you know, all those sort of early Pulp tracks. So I went back and, because they had some fantastic B-sides as well, similar to a lot of Britpop bands. All right, number 8, we have The Blue Tones, Expecting to Fly. So this was famously the album that knocked What's a Story, Morning Glory off number 1. Big band for me at the time, loved them. I remember seeing Slight Return on the whether it be the chart show or something, and just loving that video. And Mark Morris just looks super cool running around with his hair flopping about in slow motion. you know, I just thought that band was great. And yeah, big band for me. Ended up meeting three of them, not Mark Morris, backstage, interviewed them when I was at uni, which was fantastic. And yeah, and if you follow Adam from the Blue Tones on Twitter, he's hilarious on Twitter. So definitely give him a follow. But yeah, what a great album, Expected to Fly. And there's a lot of chat I put on the other one about, you know, we say supergrass, we say cast or cast. Funnily enough, they put the song Can't Be Trusted, but they spelt it C-A-R-N-T, Can't Be Trusted. So it's almost like a northerner couldn't say can't be trusted because they sort of deliberately put that R in there. So anyway, there we go. Let's have a bit of that one, shall we? Fittingly, we have at seven Shed Seven with The Maximum High. And like I said earlier, you know, they weren't necessarily my favourite band back in the day. But I'd say that over the years, Shed Seven are the Britpop band whose stock has risen the most. When you think that, you know, at the time, I don't necessarily think they were playing arenas back in sort of the 90s. And, you know, and like I said, like people like Cast and Ocean Colour Scene and Sleeper and all these people, I'd say were well ahead of them in terms of the sales and definitely the reviews. You know, Shed Seven used to be slated and people would rip the piss out of them, almost not quite probably as bad as Northern Uproar, but quite up there, I'd say. Whereas now, you know, they do these Shedsember tours and they sell out arenas and people love them, and like stuff like Chasing Rainbows have now gone down as like legendary tracks. That's sort of quite surprising to me, really. But anyway, you know, just goes to show, I suppose, the quality of songwriting will come through over the years. So, and they seem like lovely guys as well. So well deserved. All right. Six, Paul Weller, Stanley Road. Really important album. Absolutely fantastic from start to finish. You know, great tracks throughout. Out of the Sinking is brilliant and has those connections from sort of Sky Sports as well, which is always great. The Changing Man, I think, oh, what a great album. And yeah, and incredible. You know, he was only in his mid-30s at the time and he was making these era-defining albums, you know, almost 20 years on from the Jam's debut. And yet here he was as the top man. He's got the guys sort of all coming to you know, wanting to be involved. You know, inspiring that next generation. So he just did brilliantly. Top five now. And we have The Verve, Urban Hymns. Fascinating sort of parallel careers, really, if you think about Oasis and The Verve. And I did an interview with Richard. We did an episode on The Verve because he's got a book of The Verve, which is definitely worth reading. If you think, you know, The Verve starts out as the bigger band of the two, Oasis is supporting them, but then, you know, then Oasis suddenly goes stratospheric while, you know, Northern Soul does well, but not brilliantly, you know, whereas Oasis released Definitely Maybe and then Morning Glory, and then they just go supersonic, to quote a phrase. Whereas then The Verve, when they then come back with Urban Hymns after almost splitting up, you know, they effectively, those two albums pretty much went head to head because Urban Hymns came out, you know, just a month or so later. And in pretty much every metric that you want to look at, you know, Urban Hymns surpassed Be Here Now. It even outsold it, which is amazing, really. The reviews were better. And I think that generally, you know, obviously the people, even Oasis podcast think it's better because it's ranking higher. And it is a very, very special album. You know, when you think about the singles like Bittersweet Symphony and Sonnet and The Drugs Don't Work. But beyond that, you know, tracks like Catching a Butterfly, super cool. And, you know, my favourite track is Weeping Willow. I think it's brilliant. Space and Time's there at seven. This is just peak Ashcroft for me. I think he does, you know, he had some great stuff later on as well. But this era Ashcroft for me was just absolutely incredible. Right, top four now. Who have we got left? We have Park Life by Blur. So a very special record. Real interesting mix of stuff going on. You've got the jaunty fun tracks like Bank Holiday and the title track, obviously. And then you've got things like absolutely brilliant songs like This Is a Low, End of a Century, To the End, which is my favourite. Absolutely loved it. Like I said, saw them at Wembley this summer and it was just amazing. You know, End of a Century, I was in tears. You know, I just, it blew me away. But then you've got tracks like Bad Head. Bad Head is beautiful. You know, just a great overall band. So brilliant album. Absolutely love it. Yeah, number four. All right, so number three. Well, there's definitely two Oasis albums left. And who's the third album? Have you realised who it is? It is Pulp, Different Class. So Pulp win the best album not released by Oasis. And I love this. You know, this is one I had on tape. And, well, my sister had it on tape, but I used to borrow it off her all the time. And we would, like, fight over who gets to listen to it that week. It was that good. And it literally did wear out. You know, people say, oh, I listened to it until I wore the tape out. Most of the time, that's bollocks. But it was true for this. It literally did wear out. And my favourite track was Something Changed. And so I'd often, like, you know, I knew kind of where that was on the side. And so I'd know where to sort of flip it. And then I'd could listen to one and then I could flip it back over and I'd be on Something Changed. Amazing, you know, just an incredible album. Stuff like I Spy, I Know It All Off By Heart, you know, the way it ends as well. It's just a beautifully kind of structured album from start to finish. You know, every song could be like a short film. It's just incredible. So yeah, love Different Class by Pulp. For me, it could even be ahead of those two Oasis albums. But let's see what you guys had then. So, two albums to go. Unsurprisingly, as it's voted on by Oasis Podcast Twitter followers, it's Oasis in second and first. But which has come out on top? Is it the stripped-down indie breakthrough, Definitely Maybe, or the more expansive and complex follow-up, What's a Story, Morning Glory? Well, with an overall score of 4.74 out of 5, in second place it is What's the Story, Morning Glory? Meaning in first place with a score of 4.86 is Definitely Maybe.
All right, this is Liam G and I'm here to congratulate Definitely Maybe. Love that record. Without it, God knows where I'd be and God knows where we'd all be. I'll be celebrating it in my own way next year by doing some gigs, so stay tuned and listen out for details.
Now, 4.86, that's massive. You know, that if you think about the averages, you know, the vast majority of people have chosen 5 out of 5. So that's really, really very impressive. So it's well deserved though, and I do understand it. You can't really argue with the album. You know, there's no duff tracks, I don't think. Yes, I've sort of outspokenly said that I don't particularly rate Columbia very much, but I do understand that it's a very good song and it's very powerful on the album. There's some absolutely heart-wrenching classics on there like Live Forever and Slide Away. But then there's some real bangers on there like Cigarettes and Alcohol and Rock and Roll Star. I mean, I love stuff like, you know, Dixie's Dinner. Just hilarious. Just a fun, jaunty little track. Up in the Sky. It's just sort of that banger with a really, really cool kind of riff going throughout it. So, you know, it's just a great, great album. What's the Story of Morning Glory came in slightly lower, and I can kind of understand that. I think it doesn't have that same overall consistency of Definitely Maybe. And I think what's quite ironic is that for an album that's sort of more complex and layered and with more stuff going on, actually Definitely Maybe was an absolute pain in the ass to record, when all it pretty much is just guitars and drums. Whereas What's the Story of Morning Glory has got all this other stuff going on. And yeah, you know, they did it in like 10 days or whatever. So pretty mad, really. But yes. What's the Story? I suppose it's, you know, maybe some people are a bit sick of it, maybe. Sort of, it's not quite as cool as Definitely Maybe. So like, you know, maybe a few people sort of gave it a 4 or 3 or less because they, you know, they just think, oh, it's the one with Wonderwall, I'll drop it down a little bit. Personally, I think a track like Hey Now is probably my least favourite on the album. It's a bit dull, goes on a little bit, so that's probably down a bit for that. She's Electric is, you know, I really, really love it, but I suppose if you love Oasis for tracks like, you know, Live Forever and Rock and Roll Star, you hear something like She's Electric, some sort of like quirky little, you know, like a comedy song. So you sort of think, wait, what is this? So I kind of get that. But anyway, yes, there we have it. 121 albums that I deem to be Britpop. I'm sure you may have some other albums that you think are Britpop. I will be posting my list in the next few days, so do feel free to go and check that out. That will be on Patreon, but it will be a free one. So yeah, so feel free to go and check that out on Patreon to see the overall list. And yeah, let me know yours. Obviously, it does mean you're going and listening to 121 Britpop albums first, but yeah, I do. Yeah, what a great and special thing to have put together. Really pleased I've done that, and pleased you got to listen to it. And like I said, if you want to listen to a sort of a weird version with kind of a bunch of different AI voices sort of saying, some of them similar to what I've said, some of them a bit different, then do go and check that out on the Oasis Podcast B-Sides channel. But anyway, that will do it for today. Thank you for listening to the Oasis Podcast. And most of all, thanks go to our patrons. You put your money where your mouth is and it's greatly appreciated. You can become a patron at patreon.com/oasispod. Which is where we post bonus episodes. The episodes go up early. Plus, you get access to our community Discord server where all the cool kids hang out. And also, you know, free gifts when I have time to put them together and things like that. So do make sure you are supporting me over there. You can follow me on all the usual places. Feel free to email on oasispod@gmail.com and follow us on YouTube. I'll be back very shortly with more Oasis related shenanigans, including the breakdown of the announcement of Liam's Definitely Maybe tour dates, which will have probably just happened by the time you're listening to this. So anyway, thank you very much for listening. Stay in touch, stay engaged, and stay young.